Hello and welcome to Science World. International Space Station crew members had a bit of a scare this past week. Bob Doty will tell us what happened. Veronique LaCapra will tell us about the development of a remarkable new imaging system that can take 100 billion pictures a second. And we talk to a University of Maryland scientist who, with his colleagues, are teaching robots to perform complex actions such as those needed to help cook food by letting them watch YouTube videos. We'll have these stories and more on today's edition of VOA Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. The six crew members aboard the International Space Station had a bit of a scare on Wednesday and were evacuated from one segment of the space station to another for several hours. Science World's Bob Doty has the story.
The crew aboard the International Space Station was forced to evacuate into the Russian module of the station this past Wednesday after safety systems indicated there might be an ammonia gas leak in the U.S. module. But after examining the data, NASA officials on the ground discovered strong indications it was a false alarm. Astronaut Jim Kelly, working at Mission Control in Houston, Texas, passed along that information to Space Station Commander Barry Butch Wilmore.
Hey, Butch, good news for you guys. We started back up the NO2 LTL, and right now everything's looking normal. We've got almost complete insight back, and so everything's looking pretty normal right now. So it's becoming a stronger case that this was a false indication, which is great news. We're going to keep continuing down that path. Just want to pass on to you, it's a little bit more positive than we thought before.
Kelly told the station commander it was likely the astronauts would not move back into the U.S. side today as a safety precaution. NASA officials said several systems on board had reported an increase in pressure that could have indicated an ammonia leak, quote, in the worst-case scenario, end quote. And the crew had been told to isolate themselves in the Russian segment as a safety precaution while the situation was evaluated. NASA said the six-person crew of three Russians, two Americans, and an Italian were not in danger, and there was no need to consider evacuating the space station. The Space Laboratory is a 15-nation project, which is overseen by Russia and the United States, and it has been continuously occupied for nearly 15 years. It is divided into two sections, the Russian orbital segment and the U.S. orbital segment, which has been shared by various other nations. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the battle against Ebola in West Africa is making progress but is nowhere near finished. Maria Madiello reports Dr. Tom Frieden gave an update this past week on the situation from Washington.
This has been a devastating epidemic, and it's been unique. It is the world's first epidemic of Ebola, and it has stretched the world's systems and taught us what more we need to do.
At a meeting Tuesday on Capitol Hill, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Tom Frieden reminded people the epidemic that started in Guinea about a year ago could have been prevented if the countries were better prepared.
If a year ago we had had surveillance systems in the forest region where the disease emerged, it's quite possible that we could have responded quickly and ended the outbreak long ago, before so many lives and so much devastation happened.
In recent weeks, the number of new cases per day has dropped into the single digits in Liberia and Sierra Leone compared to 30 or 40 a few weeks ago. But Dr. Frieden says the affected countries are still not out of the woods, especially Guinea.
Guinea has come close to controlling it on two different occasions, and maybe they got a little bit lax, they dropped the ball a bit, and it came roaring back. That importance of following every single case until we get to zero is absolutely essential.
He says as long as there is a single case in West Africa, the risk of exporting the disease to other countries continues. Congressional Global Health Caucus co-chair Betty McCollum says the bulk of the anti-Ebola effort needs to focus on prevention.
We need to work together internationally to set up better global surveillance, not just for when it's happening or after it's happening, but before it happens, right? We live in an interconnected world.
House Foreign Affairs Committee for Africa, Global Health and Global Human Rights ranking Democrat Karen Bass says the crisis continues even if it no longer dominates the daily news.
We watched Ebola become a major crisis in the United States. And like everything, when something leaves the headlines, we all know that that doesn't mean that the crisis is gone. It also doesn't mean that things aren't getting better.
So far, there have been 21,170 reported Ebola cases in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, and 8,371 people have died. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Imagine a camera that could take 100 billion pictures a second. That's enough to record the speed of light. Veronique LaCapra talked to a scientist who has developed such an imaging system.
Biomedical engineer Li Hung Wong and his research lab at Washington University in St. Louis have invented or discovered a whole bunch of high-tech imaging techniques with sophisticated names like functional photoacoustic tomography, dark field confocal photoacoustic microscopy, and time-reversed ultrasonically encoded optical focusing. So it probably won't come as a surprise that the new camera Wong's team has developed is far from ordinary.
For the first time, humans can literally see light pulses traveling in space at a speed of light.
The speed of light is almost 300 million meters per second. Going that fast, it would take you about 1 second to go all the way around the world 7.5 times.
Based on Einstein's theory of relativity, any mass or energy can propagate only up to the speed of light. So we're literally talking about the fastest phenomenon in the world.
So how do you take a picture of a light pulse moving at, well, the speed of light? Wong says you start with something called a streak camera. That's STREAK, streak.
The streak camera is a very specialized device that allows us to convert time into space. We convert light particles or photons into electrons, then pull the electrons really hard at different rates depending on the time of arrival. So the time of arrival will be converted into different vertical positions.
Wong's new technology improves on previous ultrafast cameras in two important ways. Up until now, streak cameras could only take a one-dimensional snapshot. Think of it as looking through a vertical slit and trying to take a picture of something flying by really fast. And the fastest cameras had to have an external light source to work. Wong's technique doesn't need special lighting, and it produces two-dimensional images, more like regular photographs, but at a rate of one every 10 trillionths of a second.
It's a big deal.
That's Dartmouth biomedical engineer Brian Pogue.
Anytime that you create a system that images 1,000 times faster than what exists today, that's a big deal.
Pogue wasn't involved with developing the new imaging system, but he reviewed it for the journal Nature, where Wong's research is published. Pogue says this new way of visualizing the movement of light could lead to major scientific breakthroughs in fields like physics and military defense.
There's a lot of interest in, you know, getting light to bend around objects so it sort of looks like you're seeing through them.
Pogue says Wong's new system would allow researchers to image the light as it bends, something they haven't been able to do before and that could help make optical cloaking a reality. Li Hung Wong imagines other uses for the new camera, from molecular biology to astronomy. Really, any field where ultrafast imaging could lead to new discoveries. For VOA News, I'm Veronique LaCapra in St. Louis.
Speaking of cameras, for this week's Science World Quick Quiz, which of the following companies manufactured the video camera that was used to broadcast Neil Armstrong's One Small Step on the Moon back in July 1969? Was it A, RCA, B, Westinghouse, or C, General Electric? Think about it and good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
You're listening to Science World. VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine.
According to the McKinsey Global Institute, about one-third of the world's city dwellers are living in substandard housing. But researchers say free plans now available online for building houses made of manufactured parts that fit perfectly together may help solve this problem. George Putich reports.
The world population is expected to grow to more than 8 billion by 2030, and the housing situation in urban centers is already a huge problem. But building new homes the traditional way still takes weeks or months. In a London neighborhood, a group of volunteers is constructing a house made of prefabricated plywood panels and parts, the so-called Wiki House. All parts were precisely cut in a computer numerical control or CNC machine, following a free plan downloaded from the internet. Co-founder of the UK-based Wiki House Foundation, architectural designer Alistair Parvin, says this could be the solution for affordable housing.
Wiki House is essentially a series of technologies that we're developing aimed at massively simplifying the process of making really sustainable, high-performance houses to a point where almost anyone can do it. And we use to do that, we're using the power of the web and digital manufacturing technologies like 3D printing.
Precise cutting allows a perfect fit for all parts, which speeds up the process of assembly. No special tools are required. The Wiki House was built in 10 days for exhibition purposes. Then it was taken apart and reassembled elsewhere for permanent use. Parvin says the whole concept is based on the blueprints available online.
Open source software is now really established. It drives a lot of the software that we use. What's happening now is that that's now coming into the world of physical things. So we're effectively building a kind of Wikipedia for physical stuff.
Parvin says the project is in its early stages with limited availability, but he expects it to grow as more people start showing interest in houses whose assembly requires no special skills. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women worldwide, and race and ethnic background can impact survival. That seems to be true even when the disease is found at an early stage. Carol Pearson has more.
Although breast cancer is often considered a disease of developed countries, the World Health Organization reports almost 50% of those diagnosed with breast cancer, and more than half who die from it, live in less developed countries. According to its latest study, the WHO estimates 500,000 women died from the disease in 2011. But no matter where a woman lives, learning she has breast cancer comes as a shock. Sharon Newman recalls getting her diagnosis.
I went into denial mode. I couldn't talk to anyone about it.
Newman's tumor was small, her treatment successful. But Dr. Stephen Nayrod says small tumors can be dangerous.
Even among women with small breast cancers, there was a big difference in the survival.
Dr. Nayrod and other researchers at Women's College Hospital in Toronto studied the records of more than 400,000 breast cancer patients in the United States. They followed the women for up to 7 years after their diagnosis. The researchers wanted to see if race or ethnic background played a role in survival. Dr. Nayrod says they found it did.
Compared to a white woman, a black woman was 1.5 times to 2 times more likely to die of a small breast cancer, and a Chinese woman or Japanese woman were about half as likely to die of a small breast cancer. Hispanic women had a very similar survival pattern to white women that were not Hispanic.
Race also seemed to be a factor in the type of cancer a woman got.
Cancers are not more common in young black women, but those that do get breast cancer are more likely to have an aggressive course than a white woman, and much more likely than a Chinese or a Japanese woman.
The study tracked women in the United States from different cultural and ethnic backgrounds, as well as from different racial groups. Dr. Nayrod says the results could help doctors pick the best treatment for women based on their racial and ethnic backgrounds. There are no studies comparing survival rates between African-American women and those in sub-Saharan Africa or black women elsewhere. But Dr. Nayrod says he thinks it's likely that they are at risk for the same aggressive type of breast cancer. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Some climate experts say that if Greenland's frozen ground cover were to completely melt, the global sea level would rise more than 7 meters. Roseanne Skirbel tells us about how Greenland's vast network of rivers and streams could add to any rise in sea level.
Greenland is not just one big chunk of ice and snow.
In fact, it is a very wet ice scape covered with branching streams, rivulets, and even large flowing blue rivers.
UCLA geography professor Lauren Smith has spent 5 years studying these waterways,
which rapidly remove meltwater from the ice sheet surface and carry it via these highly organized stream systems over the ice and then into the ice through these sinkholes called moulins.
Those cracks penetrate deep into the interior of the ice sheet, carrying the meltwater into the ice, allowing it to escape into the downstream edge, and from there to flow to the ocean.
So what we've learned is that the Greenland ice sheet is not a featureless plane of ice. It's more like Swiss cheese.
Smith and his graduate students are studying these features using satellites and down-to-earth legwork. In 2012, the team was in Greenland to map 523 waterways and deploy a variety of high-tech tools.
Using a combination of satellite remote sensing, using very high-resolution military-grade imaging systems from space, as well as intensive field work involving ice camps on top of the ice sheet, involving deployment of autonomous drifters and drones, and other high-tech approaches.
Writing in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Smith says the meltwater loss from waterways is greater than loss from lakes and ice calving combined. Until now, those were thought to be the largest contributors to sea level rise.
What our research shows is there is a clear and definite connection between climatological melting on the top of the ice sheet and the downstream outflow of water to sea level rise and floods in the rivers moving over the Greenland coast.
Smith says his findings can better inform climate models that are predicting more intensive and extensive melting over Greenland in the future. That, he says, increases the likelihood of greater floods from surface waterways and their flow into the ocean. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Now let's see if you have the correct answer to this week's Science World Quick Quiz. Today we wanted to know which of the following companies manufactured the video camera that was used to broadcast Neil Armstrong's One Small Step on the Moon back in July 1969. Was it A, RCA, B, Westinghouse, or C, General Electric? The answer is B. You can be sure it's Westinghouse because they built what became known as NASA's Apollo Lunar Television Camera. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
Let's time travel in the future a bit and visit one family's kitchen. It's breakfast time, and along with all the usual gadgets and appliances needed to cook breakfast, there's also a very busy personal robot that's taking care of all the cooking and serving. Seems like we're watching a science fiction movie, right? But what we're seeing here could someday become science fact, thanks to robotic research being conducted all over the world. Most robots being used today to perform various tasks, even very simple functions, require extensive and detailed programming by humans, something that can be a long and arduous process. But Dr. Yannis Alimonos, along with his colleagues at the University of Maryland Institute for Advanced Computer Studies, have been developing robots that can teach themselves various kitchen skills simply by having them watch cooking videos on YouTube. Dr. Alimonos joins us for today's one-on-one segment to talk about his team's work in developing robots that could someday cook and service our meals. The concept that you and your colleagues have been working on seems to skip these traditional programming steps and instead are actually teaching, as you could humans, to perform functions.
Exactly. By having the robot looking at humans performing an action, if you have the right formulation, you can get the robot to learn those particular actions and to do it itself.
Along with mechanical functions to do the actual work, there is also the robot's brain, which is usually some type of computer. Using teaching methods, however, the robot needs to be able to see and hear and also be able to comprehend and replicate human-type functions. Now, how are these robots that you and your colleagues working on equipped to be able to do this?
Actually, this is what we mostly work on. We work on the brain of the computer and on the vision of the robot. Because as you well know and you have seen, many people have made robots that can pick up something and move it or perform some kind of a task. What we did is we managed to piece together all these different atomic movements into actions that make sense. So in order to do that, the robot has to be able to see the hands of the person, track the hands of the person, understand the tools that the hands are holding, understand the relationship between the tools and the objects, and recognize the consequences of actions.
So why are you using YouTube videos to do this, which vary from those that are well-written and produced to those that have bad audio video quality and may be poorly produced to teach these robots and not specifically produced videos that could provide much more detailed instructions?
We could do that. However, the ability to have a robot go into the internet and, you know, look at a number of videos and understand the actions opens new horizons in our field, because you can imagine robots taking advantage of the internet and what exists in there as a knowledge base which they can use in order to learn how to perform actions. And in our experiments, we used cooking videos. Cooking is an example, because cooking is as hard as anything that you can do with your hands. So we used cooking videos from YouTube. So as a result, then, if the robot is looking at cooking videos, it's learning how to do the same actions, which amount to cooking.
What kind of progress has your team made so far? What can your robots actually do right now?
Oh, our robots can learn a number of actions that involve tools and objects, but the relationship should not be too complex. So in other words, in the way computer science is phrasing this, the grammars, so to speak, that we built for the actions, they are context-free, while there may be actions that are depending on context, or what we call context-sensitive. So for the most part, the robots can perform actions that involve objects and effects of tools on those objects, like cutting or putting together, assembling or moving things.
And finally, Professor, how close are we to having intelligent robots helping us in our kitchens cooking our meals?
We are actually very close. As far as having robots in our kitchens cooking our meals, that will take a little longer, I suspect. But we are much closer to intelligent robots that will be working and helping humans in the new smart manufacturing environments of the immediate future.
That was Dr. Yannis Alimonos from the University of Maryland Institute for Advanced Computer Studies in College Park, Maryland. That's it for this edition of Science World. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.